We all have a food story we tell people to explain, you know, how crazy our family is, where we come from, how our grandmother made her orange carrot jello mold set every Christmas. That's mine. What's your mom's best recipe?
There's so many to choose from. I'll go with her brisket recipe.
Oh,
that is
can't
delightful.
Go wrong, yeah. And today, our next guest argues social media is making it easier than ever before to share those stories and connect through food. Vanessa Fonseca Chavez is an assistant professor in ASU's College of Integrative Sciences and Arts, where she teaches Chicano and Indigenous literature. And as she said at a recent community event about telling digital food stories, the internet is changing the way we share and learn about food culture. I sat down with her recently to talk more about it and how her own food story led her in this direction.
The story that I like to tell most is about making tamales in my family. And I shared at the Food Stories Workshop my recollection of never having made tamales with my grandmother and trying to figure out exactly when my mother learned to make tamales. She said, well, I'm sure I must have learned them from my mother because how else would I know how to make them?
Yeah.
And when I was a master's student at the University of New Mexico, we read a play called Las Nuevas Tamaleras, or The New Tamale Makers. And part of what intrigued me about that was this idea of multi-generational food stories. And there's sort of this like ghostly figure of the grandmother looking over on the different generations and the way that they make tamales. Yeah. And of course, criticizing the process. You know, there's not a giant pig head on the counter that they're pulling meat from. They're not using traditional grinders. They're using food processors. And so I think that despite the criticisms that the grandmothers gave forth in that play, the most important message was that this is being passed on through generations, and that food knowledge is what really matters the most.
Yeah.
My mom that Christmas said, hey, you know, I think we should just buy tamales this year. And I almost lost my mind. And I was like, no, we can't. It's so important. Like, I'm taking all these classes on Chicano literature and these, you know, generational food stories. And to me, it impacted me in a different kind of way. Mm-hmm. And so that year I made tamales by myself at my mom's house in Albuquerque. But I was on the phone with her constantly asking her, well, what do I do next? And where do I get this masa? And how do I know if it's right? So I was asking questions about consistency, about flavor. And all I knew was that in some way, the masa and the chile had to come together in some sort of delicious way, cooked, delicious. And so I learned a lot from her that day. And for me, it was really important to get that knowledge, even if I didn't specifically remember as a child being there during the process. And so this past Christmas, I was sitting with my mom and my family, and we were making tamales, and it was just a really beautiful sight to see children there. My mom was there, my aunt was there, and it was really nice to know that they may have those memories, and so we're passing it on to another generation.
So you brought the tradition back.
I don't want to take responsibility for that or credit for that, but I certainly, you know, to me it was very impactful having been, you know, a student of Chicano literature and thinking about culturally what does it mean to preserve food traditions and cultural heritage within my own family.
Yeah. So where does social media come into play with this? Because you're arguing that this is a moment in time in which we have sort of unprecedented access to sharing those kinds of stories in a different way.
Oh, absolutely. So on social media, it's very interesting because if you just search making tamales, you're going to come up with a million different sites about how to do it, curated by, you know, different cookbook websites, different cultural organizations like MeToo, for example, which is a specific site for Latino culture, heritage, food. And as part of that, you also get the backstory to the recipes, which is what I really appreciate. So it's put within a cultural context, which is unlike what we normally see in cookbooks. And cookbooks generally, you know, I'm thinking about cookbooks as sort of this meta narrative. And within literature, you often find early Hispanic writers giving you recipes for particular food items. And then there are stories that accompany that. Yeah. And so that's really nice. And that's something I'm now seeing in a digital sense, which is really exciting. Bon Appetit magazine, for example, has hired a series of Hispanic writers to kind of take on the challenges of presenting those recipes in a digital way, but also embedding the cultural context in history.
Interesting.
And those are very regional also. So, you know, you may have someone from Puerto Rico explaining how to make tamales, which is very different from someone from northern Mexico, for example.
Right.
And so I really enjoy seeing the variation and the different ties one has to that food, which is a lot less static than you might see in a traditional cookbook.
So it sounds like you think it can be really empowering for people to tell their own food stories, to sort of, like you did, connect it to your own culture, to your own heritage.
Absolutely. I think that for a lot of people, food is the first thing we think about when we're thinking about cultural heritage. And when I moved to Arizona to start my doctoral program in 2008, one of the things that I wanted to find first was New Mexican restaurants, because I'm from New Mexico. I had not left New Mexico until that time. And the first thing I wanted to see is, where can I connect with food away from my home? And so I have a list of all the New Mexican restaurants that exist in the Phoenix metro area. And I visit them often because if I'm feeling far away from home, that's the first place I go to reconnect.
You need those Hatch chilies.
Absolutely. And there are, you know, I was very excited. A couple years ago on my way, I teach at the Polytechnic campus. And on the way, there was a Hatch Green Chili Festival. You know, just the sights and sounds, being in the presence of sort of that cultural embodiment of me. Yeah. Right. Through food was really great that particular day.
This is really interesting. It's coming from you because you're not a chef, right? Like, I've had similar conversations with people who are in the food world, but you're in the sort of literature side of it and looking at it in a very different lens.
I am. And I think I've been told I'm a great cook by lots of my family members. And in fact, when I made tamales the one year that I was telling you about, my dad said, "These are the best tamales I've ever had. You're now in charge." And that was a big role to take on. But it was also interesting this past Christmas when I walked into the kitchen. It was clearly my mother's domain. Hmm. And I said, "How can I help?" And she said, "You can just stand there and look pretty." But I'm not a chef. I really love cooking. On my Twitter page, it says that I'm an aspiring tortilla maker because I have yet to get it right. And I don't know that any amount of digital media will point me in that direction, because there's something about not only learning a recipe, but also evoking those memories of home. So when you bite into a tortilla, does it taste like the one that your grandmother made? Or, you know, I told a story in the Food Stories workshop about my grandmother putting pickle juice in taco meat. And, you know, doing that and then, you know, experiencing that smell at that moment just like automatically transports you back to in your grandmother's kitchen when you were 5 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking forward a little bit, do you think that social media and the ways in which it enables us to tell our own food stories, do you think it's creating new food communities?
I think it definitely helps. I think that for a lot of people, there are a number of Facebook pages, for example, that are Mexican food recipes or, you know, all these different sites that allow people to engage in conversations. And it starts often with photos or, you know, I'm trying to make this pozole and I'm not really sure. And then you have all these people sort of chime in and they say, "Well, I make it this way and I make it this way." Yeah. I think that's all really helpful for us to kind of figure out how to do these things if we're not chefs and if we are aspiring tortilla makers or we are aspiring to be more culturally connected. I think it's a really good way for people to engage in conversations. Now, the interesting part about it is often you'll have people start to fight on these Facebook pages. So, you know, somebody will spell chili with an I instead of an E, and then everybody will be like, "Well, you're not really New Mexican, or you're not really this because you do this." The other really interesting thing that just came out this last week is the University of Texas in San Antonio digitized more than 1,000 Mexican cookbooks from the 1800s to the present.
Wow.
And so I think another part of just our historical memory and cultural traditions, we can learn so much from those early cookbooks, especially now that we have access to them and we don't actually have to go to the University of Texas at San Antonio, although they have a great culinary scene, so it might be nice to go. But to even have access to those things through a digital platform is really important.
Yeah, you're making me hungry. All right, Vanessa Fonseca Chavez, assistant professor at ASU's College of Integrative Sciences and Arts, who teaches Chicano and Indigenous literature there. Vanessa, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Lauren.